We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. Over the past few months, a new and a very vocal political movement has sprung up across America, drawing in a lot of people who have really never been involved, at least not in this way, in politics before. Now, while the members may not have a common agenda, one thing certainly they do all seem to agree on is that they are angry. They're angry with a government that they feel has abandoned them and their interests. In this hour of Focus, we'll try to talk a little bit about the Tea Party movement and what it's all about and ask some basic questions like, does it have a coherent agenda and will it have any lasting impact on American politics? And our guest for this morning is a journalist who spent some time following the movement. We're talking this morning with Mary Curtis, and she, among other things, covered the national convention, the National Tea Party Convention, that was held in Nashville in early February. One of the things that she does, one of her activities now, is as a contributor to AOL's online political site, politicsdaily.com. And so she was there covering it for Politics Daily. Let me tell you just a little bit more about her. She is an award-winning writer, editor, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's worked as columnist and editor at the Charlotte Observer, also has worked as writer or editor at a number of other places, including the New York Times, Baltimore Sun, the Arizona Daily Star, and the Associated Press. She is joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. We're interested in the opinions and comments of people who are listening. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. So if it's long-distance call for you, use that number. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. And we'll also take your emails at will-talk. So that's W-I-L-L-talk, just like it sounds. Will-talk at illinois.edu. Ms. Curtis, hello.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, no, I appreciate you asking me.
Before you went to the convention, had you spent much time following or thinking about the Tea Party movement?
Well, yes, I was curious. I was curious about, you know, who made up the Tea Party movement, you know, how it came to be, how it seemed to get various groups together, basically, and what was the philosophy of the people in the Tea Party group. You know, I had looked at the coverage of the rallies, the protest rallies of September 12th in Washington, D.C. You look at the signs, and basically people talk about fiscal responsibility and smaller government, but then you also had signs that were very critical of Obama, calling him, you know, a communist, a fascist, and that sort of thing. And I just sort of wondered, who are these folks, and why are they so mad?
Well, there are a couple of pretty good basic questions to start with, and that it, you know, given the fact that it does seem that the different people who are participating in this, or at least have participated in rallies and meetings and so forth, that they do come to it with, you know, different kinds of personal agendas. That is their, you know, their own list that they have of things that really concern them. From person to person, that may well be kind of different. So, having said all that, do you have some sort of a sense of common agenda items, things that a large number of people who are involved in the movement would say, yes, I sign on to that?
Well, when I was down in Nashville, one of the things that they announced was the formation of a political action committee, and they said, and that's sort of controversial in itself, because some folks really don't want to be so organized as to be associated with certain candidates and parties, rather parties, and that obviously a PAC is going to endorse certain candidates and support certain candidates, but basically it was announced that the candidates would be vetted on their adherence to what is called first principles, which is fiscal responsibility, lower taxes, less government, states' rights, and national security, and that's sort of what the principles are. That said, being in Nashville, basically you saw other sort of commonalities. You had said someone like Tom Tancredo speaking, and you know he had his famous quote that people put a socialist ideologue, you know, Barack Hussein Obama in the White House, people who couldn't spell the word vote or say it in English, and he talked about having a civics literacy test for voters, which got a lot of applause, and then a lot of folks, of course, recalled the times of literacy tests that kept African Americans from voting, in, you know, in the 60s and 50s and so forth. So, I mean, you have folks like that. You had the gentleman from WorldNet Daily talk about the birther movement and saying that Obama wasn't a citizen. And so you have sort of these outlying sort of issues that some people seem to applaud and others would basically not want to get associated with the movement because they would be distracted as fringe issues. One thing I did notice, too, that I really didn't realize quite so much beforehand is that there was a very much a religious component to a lot of the folks there, a lot of talk that we are a country, a Christian country under God. We strayed away from morality and God's rules. And Judge Roy Moore, who, as you recall, was the judge who was actually removed because of he wanted to put the Ten Commandments on the courthouse steps. He was a speaker there, and he talked quite a bit about God and about, you know, we've strayed from that. And so that was an issue, too. And mm-hmm. and also one thing that seemed to unite them is that a lot of people liked Sarah Palin quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
and she was the keynote speaker, and there was huge enthusiasm for her. And even though they said it is not a political movement, I would say most of the people there were Republicans or independents that trended toward being very Republican or conservative, and they want the party to get more conservative. And, you know, such as the Chris Rubio race in Florida, those kinds of issues. So I don't think you found too many people that, you know, were Democrats there or would associate themselves with them. And most people said they had voted for John McCain. So, sort of holding their nose for John McCain as the lesser of two evils, but many more people were enthusiastic about the presence of Sarah Palin on that particular ticket.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point there, and that is, you know, I think people of the Tea Party movement, they ask, well, is this a new movement? Does this have potential for being a new party? Is this something new? I think you'd have to say most of the issues that are important to the Tea Party people, if you say, is there some party that pretty much believes in this? You would have to say, well, yeah, it's the Republican Party. So rather than really striking out in a new direction, chances are if these people are going to identify anywhere, they're going to identify with the GOP. And their only issue with the Republican Party is that it's moved too far. It's moved too close to the middle. And what they want to do is to push it back over to the right in any more conservative direction. And chances are they probably would be happy to vote for a Republican candidate, provided that candidate was in harmony with their beliefs.
Well, yes, in the sense that, too, you know, like they took credit for Scott Brown, you know, of course, in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And he has sort of not been quite so, you know, wanting to identify with them. But, I think that there was a lot of criticism also for Bush, for past President Bush, because of his support of a stimulus package. So that was a great deal of there was not a lot of love for Bush there. But when I asked if, you know, why was there not this sort of revolt when the Republicans were in office and running up, you know, deficits, they would basically say, well, we didn't like Bush really either. But it's just gotten a lot worse under Obama. And, you know, Obama was criticized terribly there. And people very much would be very calmly saying that, you know, yes, he's communist, he's towards socialism, he has some fascist tendencies, those kinds of things, which was kind of interesting. And, I spent, you know, quite a few days. The people were very nice. The people there did not have the raised voices that you have seen at some of the Tea Party meetings and some of the rallies. I think they're very conscious that they don't want to be seen as people who are angry in a very volatile sense, but, you know, angry in a organized way, in a way that they want to change the government. They want to, you know, there was a lot of talk about taking the country back, and I also asked them about that, you know, back from whom to where. And, you know, they just have a sense that America was more moral, that America was more patriotic, You know, they don't want the deficits, but it is kind of interesting that that was, you know, a piece of it. So, you know, it was interesting. I'm African American, I happen to be, and there were very few African American Tea Party members there or delegates. It skewed older, and I think, and there weren't many people of color, except they did have several people of color on the program that spoke, a bishop, a minister, a young man who was a part of a Tea Party documentary, who I talked with, who had voted for Obama, but he wanted to take that vote back. He was very conservative. And a couple of people who were running for office that they were supporting, who were African-American women who were conservative. But people, I never brought it up in particular, but they were very much wanting to bring it up and saying, this isn't because Obama's black. This isn't a movement that's just for whites. This is a movement about being patriotic. And as the bishop got up, he said, it's not about Obama's being black. It's about whether he's red, white, and blue. But they brought that up because I think they're kind of aware that if you look around, you wouldn't see many people of color. And, in fact, I wrote in one of my notebooks that it was kind of funny. I was approached several times by journalists covering it who wanted to talk to a black member of the Tea Party, and they would make a beeline for me and be very disappointed when I said, no, I'm a working journalist.
You're another reporter.
Yeah, I had said I could have been on TV a lot.
Well, it also seemed to be that people who were there were participants. I think also some of them were initially happy to see you for that very reason, because they don't want to be perceived as being racist, they don't want this movement to be seen as something that is only white. And I think maybe they also thought, well, at least here's one African American person. And I wonder if maybe they were also a tiny bit disappointed. Not that they weren't nice to you, but a tiny bit disappointed when they realized, no, you weren't there as a delegate, that you were there as a journalist.
Yeah, I think, but they were very nice to me. As I said, I did come to an open mind, and I had dinner with folks and talked with them, and there was a lot of media bashing there. And once it was kind of uncomfortable because the media was on a raised platform on the back, and a speaker, Andrew Breitbart, started talking about, you know, elite media and the Hamptons and things like that, which kind of funny to me because, you know, I live a very middle-class life in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I don't really go off to the Hamptons all the time. But people started sort of, you know, yelling at the media and saying, go home. And the folks I have been talking to, an older couple from California, very nice folks, we have been talking about lots of things, and they were, you know, I think they're going too far, you know. And their sense was, it's not that we don't like the media, we want an honest, you know, media. So, but people were quite nice. I think that it was interesting that, you know, people would bring it up. But I don't think they want people to know that they're sincere in their beliefs. Many of them spoke about, I don't want this deficit for my children and my grandchildren, that's why I'm here. There was hostility to the health care reform bill, which, you know, for many reasons, whether that it included abortion or they felt it would result in more deficits or something like that. And I just think people wanted to not have their sincerity questioned. And I have to say, before I went, some of the folks I know said some pretty stereotypical things about folks in the Tea Party. They said, you know, how can you go there? And I couldn't stand to be near them. And which I thought that was a little extreme, too, because basically they're Americans. They have this point of view. They're people. I want to talk with them. I wrote a piece this past weekend called America the Peevish for Politics Daily that the rhetoric on both sides sometimes gets so extreme, it's as though if you disagree with someone, you're a villain. It's like a victim or villain, a patriot or, you know, Al-Qaeda sympathizer. And there's no sense that you might have some person who disagrees with you on a basic political issue that's a patriotic American who wants the best for his or her country. I see it sometimes in the comments, on online comments. You know, and I know online is anonymous, so you get that. But sometimes it's not just I disagree with you or I disagree with this other person, but it's this person is a bad person and this person is a terrorist and Obama's a communist. And I find that I find it disheartening. And I know it has always been that way, but in 2010 I would like to think that we have learned something. And it is disheartening to me sometimes. But it is a bit on both sides. And I saw it before I left. with people making assumptions about the people in the Tea Party, and then I saw it, you know, down there where people were making these blanket statements about groups of people that I'm not even sure they believe, because I think in their own life they probably have family and friends and acquaintances who disagree, who they're very close to. You know, so it's tough sometimes.
Our guest in this hour of Focus, Mary Curtis. She is currently a contributor to AOL's online news site, politicsdaily.com. In fact, the piece that she just mentioned, you can read on there. She has been columnist and editor at the Charlotte Observer, has worked as writer or editor at a number of other places, New York Times, Baltimore Sun, Arizona Daily Star. She was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard in 2006 and has contributed to the Nieman Watchdog Political and Media blog. She's also been on commentator on CNN, MSNBC, Air America, and she was at the recent National Tea Party Convention that was a little over a month ago. It was in early February. It was held in Nashville, and she was there for Politics Daily. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have a couple of people here to talk with.
Oh, great.
Let's go to Gilbert. This is our first caller on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Nice to talk to you. I just got back recently from South Carolina, and I was really amazed at how much depression there was down there and racism. And I just thought that was – I think they're 100 years or 150 years behind time, but I sat down and talked to a couple of people there. A couple of friends retired down there about a decade ago, and he was explaining all the situation. But anyway, long story short, it seems to me that South Carolina has, with all these green things that Obama wants to put through, the reason why they're having such a problem to me, and it might be the same thing as in North Carolina too, is that there's no manufacturing. I mean, the biggest complaint that I heard from everybody was there's no work down there. There's no jobs, no plants, no manufacturing, nothing. Well, you know, here we're in an economy that both Democrats and Republicans have had a say in trying to make this thing, you know, make it better, but yet they refuse to. They made it worse every year that somebody gets in. You know, I don't understand it. I really don't, especially being as close to Washington instead of being out here in Illinois. You know, especially Barack Obama. If he says he's going to be the guy of change, why can't, you know, you put things in places? I was down to McCormick, for instance, to McCormick, South Carolina. I was just very disturbed in what goes on down there, and it's throughout the South. And I'm sure you, being from Charlotte, can understand this. To me, this country is in a spin to no end. I think it's going to get worse, and places like that are just going to, you know, basically blow away, and people are going to forget about it. And I just don't understand it. I was very surprised. They're still living in the Civil War out there, as far as I'm concerned.
Mary, Gilbert, you kind of paint it with a broad brush, and you know, I'm in Charlotte, which is actually on the South Carolina North Carolina border, and it was the banking center, of course, here in Charlotte, because Bank of America and Wachovia, now Wells Fargo, were both located here, and obviously they've had their own problems. Although recently, you know, just I think the last couple of days, there was a new plant of Siemens opening up that's going to bring more jobs here to Charlotte. But you're right in the sense that manufacturing, of course, this is where there were a lot of textile manufacturers and other places, and so much of that has gone overseas, and those jobs will never come back. So you have folks with, you know, a high school education, or in some instances less than that, being able to get great jobs and, you know, live a life. And those jobs are gone. But, you know, at the same time, as I said, with Siemens and some other areas, you can see some jobs coming back. The latest unemployment figures that I guess this week came out, both in North and South Carolina, weren't great. And, you know, South Carolina and North Carolina are very different, obviously. I wouldn't say that, you know, the South is racist or anything like that. I think every state has its issues. Of course, South Carolina is a little famous, you know, the home of Joe Uli Wilson and Mark Sanford and the gentleman Andre Barra, who's running, the lieutenant governor, who made the comment about people on you know, welfare being like stray animals and you can't feed them too much or whatever, you do sometimes think that South Carolina, you hear something said and you think, oh my goodness, they're probably from South Carolina. But at the same sense, you know, it's a place that, you know, had the Confederate flag over the state house, and it was lowered when there were protests. You know, like any other place, you know, it has its problems, but you have great people there. And, you know, it's hurting economically like many states because, as you say, the manufacturing base is gone in some ways. But, you know, you also have different things happening in those states, different positive things in both North and South Carolina, different manufacturers coming in and investing, you know, getting breaks from the state and investing. So, you know, I wouldn't paint it with, you know, that broad a brush, although I will say that, you know,
recently. That's a great place. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I was great. I'm looking at possibly moving down there to retirement because I got friends down there. They were selling me a hook, line, and sinker. I was right off some of those lakes down there because I'm a big fisherman. So,
yeah.
You know, it's beautiful. You know, it's sad to see people suffer. And, you know, I like to donate my time and my efforts to as many people as I can. But just to go through the pain and suffering, especially young kids, they were saying only 54, 56% of the high school graduates actually, that's all they graduate out of the schools. You know, it's hard to train people that. I mean, where's the training? Maybe they should set up training schools to do like what I do in construction. You could do all kinds of teach young kids how to be practical, you know, just to learn things. There's nothing down there.
Well, you don't have to go to South. Excuse me, Gilbert, but you don't have to go to South Carolina to see some problems with the school system. It is difficult, and they are coming out of a legacy where there was an unequal system, so there are problems. I'll be going down in the next week or so to Bennettsville, South Carolina, which was the home of Marion Wright Edelman, head of the Children's Defense Fund, and there's going to be a new library opening up, and she'll be down there. So, you know, every little bit helps. You know, things like that happening, but it is. Tough, you know, and down there is going to be this tough race, congressional race, because Wilson and his opponent both got tons of money after he yelled, "You lie," at the president. So it's.
Yeah. I want to thank the caller. I have a couple other people that I want to get to. But also, though, some of the things caller said make me wonder when you look at something like the Tea Party movement. And again, we should all be careful about the broad brush. But when you were talking earlier about the issues from the people that you talk to, the issues that really concern them, a lot of them seem to be the values stuff. And I wonder how much of this movement also has to do with people's unhappiness about various kinds of economic dislocations that have been going on here, not just in the last year, but in a number of years now.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'd say that these folks, you know, there was like the Tea Party Convention was criticized because of the $549 registration fee. And these people here weren't, I would say, for the most part, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but you didn't have people that easily wrote that check, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to come down and be with like folks, and a lot of them were struggling. And I do think, you know, so when you see, you know, immigration issues came up quite a bit, you know, the competition for the few jobs that you have. I think in times of economic stress, people, it's harder to be, you know, generous in spirit about those kinds of things because you just want to pay the mortgage. And also there's a sense of, is the government going to take over and give stuff to people who aren't working, you know, as hard as I have worked to get what I have? And, you know, these are people who are struggling, you know. That's why when some of the rhetoric about, you know, you have people who have values as opposed to people who go to Whole Foods and, you know, and drink at, you know, lattes and things like that, you know. So I do think that economic uncertainty, you know, that's when the time is right for these kinds of groups, because it's difficult and you want to pull inward and get with folks who you feel have the same kinds of values in many ways. So I just think because of the folks I talk with, and I go to a church down here where there are a lot of conservative folks. I have a friend, an older couple that they, you know, they love Rush Limbaugh, you know, and I say, yeah, you love him if you want, but just realize he's an entertainer, you know. so I see that people have more in common, but in times of economic stress, it's going to be more about the competition, you know, and a sense that someone's going to get free health care and I have to struggle for mine, things like that. And you see a lot of that. And you know, it's kind of understandable in a way, but at the same time, you wish that people could have concern and not have that also mean that someone else is a bad person, you know. And you had that, you know, people who believe in climate change, you know, are bad people, you know. Mm-hmm. And which some of the sessions here were on different things like that, the breakout sessions. And you'll get, if you go to some of these websites, you'll see that, you know, they're anti-climate change legislation, you know, demonizing actually South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham for working with John Kerry on those kinds of issues from Massachusetts. They want certainty and purity, and that's difficult. You know, should that be the goal? Should compromise and cooperation is almost looked at as capitulation, and so it's very difficult for groups to get together when you see you're going to be punished for it. You know, Charlie Crist is being criticized for having hugged Obama when he came to visit or something like that. So, you know, it does make you, you know, wonder. But and the Tea Party is about being strong and certain. And, you know, right now they're going after certain other politicians. The Tea Party Express is going to do another, I think, third bus tour, and it's going to start out in Searchlight, Nevada, which is the hometown of Harry Reid, the birthplace, and they're going after him. And their speaker is going to be Sarah Palin. And she's another whole interesting, you know, person who she made very clear that the Tea Party doesn't have a leader or a king or a queen or anything like that. And I wrote a story that said, will she be the leader? And there was a little bit of pushback. Well, we don't have a leader. But a lot of people there did think that she is sort of the epitome of what, you know, an American should be, you know, as a person, as a mother, as a hunter. She's like me, you know. And I wrote that people who criticize her for not being as knowledgeable as she should be on certain issues, that's really beside the point. That's not, you know, going to have any traction, because this, her, one of her appeals is that she's like everyone else, you know, whether you think she is or not, you know, that, I mean, she was the governor of a state, you know, but, and that she can learn just like I can learn, and the fact that she can be successful and write a book means that anybody can, means that I can, means that you can. So attacking her for not being, you know, like knowledgeable enough or well-read enough, will never gain traction.
We have some other callers. Let's talk next with someone in Belgium, not too far away. Line 2, hello.
Hello, and good morning. Uh-huh. I started off with an original question, but I have to make a comment. I don't understand this thing about Sarah Palin at all. She's a pretty face that McLean grabbed out of a spot that looked like she could possibly be a candidate and could move in the media, and you see what kind of a hot wire she is. But I want to go on to what else. Early on in your discussion, you said you asked one of these people, and they said one of the most important things they thought was they didn't want to give this big debt we have to their great-grandchildren. Why don't journalists ask, well, you know, the only way you're going to solve that problem is to raise your taxes and pay that debt off. It's our responsibility. It's our debt. If we don't want to go to our grandkids, then we should pay for it. Why don't you folks ask that question?
Well, they don't want taxes. I mean, you know, that's sort of the understood thing. You know, that's part of it. They don't want debt, and they don't want to pay taxes or raise taxes. They feel that tax, you know, breaks should go to, you know, small businesses and things like that, and that will grow the economy. And, you know, I think they feel that a lot of problems can be solved by, you know, not having government programs of, you know, letting, you know, banks and things like that, not giving, you know, stimulus programs to those things, not, you know, doing health care for people that, you know, for health care reform bills, you know. But, you know, I think you can see in California what's going on, whereas they have this they have bills that you can't raise taxes, and now they're drowning in debt.
But ma'am, I have to point out, and California is a good example. Illinois is even a fabulous example too. We have incurred these debts in the past, ma'am. If I've consumed electricity, if I've ate the groceries, if I've bought the new car, I have got to pay for it. We in America have to realize we have bought these things. It's time for us to pay for it. However it's done, we've got to pay for it.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you.
Thank you very much.
I just, yeah, I appreciated that call. I don't disagree with the caller. I just think that that is a hard sell.
And it's also, I guess
that
it's
going to be a hard sell because people are always going to think, I don't want to pay more taxes to go to people who don't deserve these programs.
Yeah, it's also, I think sometimes as a journalist, it's a little difficult to, particularly if you're talking with someone, not a politician, but somebody who is, somebody like this who maybe thinks of themselves as a kind of a citizen political activist, but even would avoid that kind of label. It's, I think sometimes it's difficult as a journalist to back that person into a corner and to really be in their face about inconsistencies in what they believe. I don't know about you, but I think that can be sort of uncomfortable saying to people, you're saying this, but here over here you're saying this, and those two things, they don't square up.
Well, I'm a reporter, but I do reported commentary, so sometimes in my columns I do kind of go in putting my little opinion there from time to time or making an observation, but I try not to be judgmental. And I think oftentimes it's interesting because I will write something and someone on one side will say, oh, you did a great job, and the other side, they said, oh, yes, you did a great job. And mainly it's because I quote people a lot. I quote what they say. And sometimes, it is evident, that what they say is contradictory. And I think putting it out there, let people judge on their own. And so, I did that at the Tea Party, the whole what do you want to take the country back from? And mm-hmm. I would quote people and, why do you think Obama is a socialist or think something like that? Or, if I quote somebody comparing him to Mussolini, I think I don't have to point out that that's an extreme view. You put it out there, and there's some people are going to look at it and say, wow, that's pretty extreme, Obama's Mussolini. And then other people are going to say, well, I guess maybe you think he is a little bit like that, And also I think backing someone up, that's really not going to change their view. It's just going to really make them shut down and think that you have an axe to grind. And I really do try to go into things with an open mind. I mean, I did a I'm not comparing the Nashville Tea Party folks to these other people I'm going to talk about, but I did a narrative piece on Confederate heritage groups, and I visited all these groups, some of which just wanted to put wreaths on graves, and others who wanted to secede from the Union now. you go in and you listen and you quote it, and, people can draw what they want from it. So, I take the caller's question very seriously. But I just try to give folks a voice, kind of put in what I think, and, you're going to have different interpretations, You're going to have the MSNBC, you're going to have the Fox, You're going to have different interpretations.
We have about 15, 16 minutes left in this hour of Focus. So let me just very quickly, before going on to other callers, introduce again our guest, Mary Curtis. She is an award-winning journalist, writer, editor based in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's been a columnist and editor at the Charlotte Observer. She's also worked as writer or editor at the New York Times, Baltimore Sun, Arizona Daily Star. She was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard and is a contributor to the Nieman Watchdog political and media blog. Her work has appeared in a number of places. She's been commentator on CNN, MSNBC, Air America, and she's currently a contributor to AOL's online news site, politicsdaily.com. You can see some of her writing there. And in fact, she was at the National Tea Party Convention that was held in Nashville in early February and wrote about it for Politics Daily. Mm-hmm. And that's why it is we have her on the program. I was thinking it'd be interesting to talk about this. And I said to my producers, well, see if we can find a journalist who spent some time covering the Tea Party folks. And we found Mary. And so she said, yeah, she'd be happy to spend some time talking with us. So we appreciate it.
And I also put a little plug in. I've been doing a lot of work lately for TheRoot.com, which is the Washington Post site.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And we have some other folks to talk with. Next up is, I believe, somebody who is listening in Coles County on our line three. Hello.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I believe the driving idea behind this is very similar to the idea of people in other right-wing movements through the years, including the George Wallace movement in 1968. I think in the minds of many of these people, the driving idea is the idea that a very large percentage of minorities could work, could get a job, but refuse to and are on welfare. I think, of course, the truth is that the cost of those particular people is probably very, very small percentage of the federal deficit. I would suspect if you would total up the cost of those people, of those particular people on welfare, it would be maybe 2% of the federal deficit, maybe 2-4% at the most of the federal deficit. But I think if you'd ask these people individually, they would probably guess it at 50 or 60%. I think they actually feel that most of the deficit of Illinois and of the federal government is because of these darn people that are on welfare but could work, could get a job but don't, when in fact that is a little bit of a problem, but it's probably a problem that constitutes 2-4% of the deficit instead of the 50 or 60% that these people probably conjure up in their minds. That's all.
All right. Well, yeah, okay.
Well, you also heard, I think, a lot. There was a lot of anger at the banks and, you know, the Wall Street types, you know, bailing out of Wall Street. There was a lot of anger of that. And I think a certain amount that a lot of the housing crisis was caused by people who did not deserve to get loans, getting loans. So in that sense, there was a lot of anger at that. So I would say, yeah, I'm not sure if I hadn't talked enough to a lot of the folks to think that there are a lot of people on the public dole getting money who, you know, they shouldn't. But I think overall that's sort of a thought that, you know, I've worked hard. You know, there are people who aren't working hard. I will say that with the economic problems the country has gone has had, that there are a lot of people who realize that it's not that difficult to be unemployed and want to have a job. So the whole sense that if you want to work, you can work, I think a lot of people have seen that that's not particularly true. I'm not sure that as that eases up, that that will make people more sympathetic to people in communities of color that have traditionally had higher records of unemployment for a variety of reasons. I'm not sure that that will translate as things get better. But it has been interesting that people can see now that, you know, it's hard to have a job if you're laid off. You know, here in North Carolina, if you were, I mean, North Carolina went for Obama. It went blue for the first time, voted for the first time for a Democrat in a presidential election since 1976. It was close. It was by, I think, something like 14,000 votes. And I think that came down to the fact of the economy and people wanting, realizing that social issues like abortion and things like that meant less if you're out of a job and your job's going overseas. They were thinking, oh, let me give, you know, Obama a shot. I think there's been some disaffection with him since then, but we'll see. We have an open Senate seat, Senator, Republican Senator Burr is running for re-election, and part of that we'll see in November how that goes, and I think that'll be a little telling for Democrats. But it's the Tea Party, it was very interesting to be there and to see. I wonder if all this disparate grassroots groups of people, so many who started out with a bunch of folks in their neighborhoods and, you know, writing a message out on Facebook and getting a bunch of people together, how together it will stay, you know, or if it will, you know, fracture based on different disagreements. I'm curious to follow that.
That's, I think that is one of the, you know, from the standpoint of people who follow political movements, I think that's some of the most interesting questions. That is there enough coherence here for this movement to hang together? And what's really interesting about it is, on the one hand, I'm sure that they want to have some influence. And as you said earlier, they formed a political action committee. But at the same time, they also, one of the values of the movement is that it's diffuse and that there's no one person in charge. And it seems on the one hand, if you actually want to have some political impact, you have to be organized, and maybe somebody has to be in charge, and you have to agree on some set of principles. But so much of the sort of the value of the movement in terms of values that is people hold have to do with it being more decentralized, more grassroots, doesn't have a single person in charge. And it seems like those two things are in conflict with one another.
Oh, yes, it's true. And also it'll be interesting to see the Republican establishment, how much it wants to align itself with it. And, you know, will it be burned down the road if it goes too far aligning itself with this particular movement? Will it help? Will it hurt with independence if it's seen as going too extreme? And I think right now they're approaching it cautiously because they want to use the Tea Party movement and use that energy, but they don't want to be burned by it. So, you know, they just recently got in trouble with the fundraiser that had, you know, Obama's the Joker and all of that. So I do think you see that there is a limit that you can go to. So I think that is interesting, you know, how much the Tea Party movement. But they're feeling very strong, you know. They're feeling strong with Perry in Texas, and who is very friendly with the movement. And they even counted the loss in the congressional seat in New York State as a win because they felt that they pushed Didi Scotsavapa out. And even though ultimately a Democrat won that, they said, well, the Democrat who won it was more conservative than the establishment Republican candidate. So it's quite interesting, and there was a lot of enthusiasm. Mm. And so,
Other callers, let's see. Let's go to the next, and I believe is in someone in Leroy. Line four, hello.
Good morning, David.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Two brief comments and a question, if I might, for our guest. Richard Hofstadter's essay in 1963, 1964, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, pretty well describes the Tea Party movement and their philosophy, if you will, pretty accurately. And I've seen statistics that suggest that the conservatives, people on the right, tend to still continue to believe that the Iraqis had some participation in the 9/11 attacks, despite the evidence to the contrary. And my question would be, what we seem to have danced around for the entire hour is the elephant in the room, racism. Isn't the Tea Party movement essentially the party of racists? Isn't it primarily driven by white, more or less southern, lower socioeconomic status type individuals? And I'd hang up and listen.
All right.
Well, I think that's a little simplistic. I do think, as I said, that race, you look at the group and it's older and wider, is a piece of it. You don't have too many. And when you have someone like Tom Tancredo getting applause for saying that people voted for Barack Obama who couldn't spell the word or say it in English, I mean, I think that's a piece. But I do think, first of all, it's not folks just from the South. I met people from all over the country, Washington State, California, everywhere. And also, I think it is too simple. I wouldn't call any of those folks individually racist. I don't know them. And they were very enthusiastic about the few black speakers who were there. The bishop, as I said, you know, every time people would say to me, we're not racist. Did you see the bishop, you know, who spoke? And everyone came up afterwards, bless you, because they were very happy to see him without sort of also saying, you know, look around at the crowd. Maybe there's a reason why people don't feel comfortable being here because of the other rhetoric. And I think also the attacks on Barack Obama, while not specifically racist, when there are some signs that have racism in them, and they have been, although they weren't really there, they weren't at this convention, you are open to that. But I don't think it helps to get to the next step, to listen to them, to call them racist, because I think it's much more complicated than that. I do think that just from talking to people, that you see your country a certain way, you see the presidency as a certain way, and the country is changing demographically. It's changing, and you know there might, you know, there's folks like Pat Buchanan who have talked openly about, you know, it's kind of not a, kind of American anymore. There are folks that don't seem to think that diversity is the strength of this country. And Compton Cratoe speaks very openly about he feels that multiculturalism is worse than the fiscal crisis, and you might have some people who agree with it, and there were folks lined up to take pictures with him. At the same level, I don't think that I think it's very simplistic and really not fair to say that they're all racist and it's a racist movement. I don't. I think there are other, and it keeps us from looking at these other concerns they have about the deficit and different other things, about states' rights, you know, which is, I was having dinner with some of them, and they were talking about states' rights, and I says, you know what, is there any chance ever that the federal government is right to, you know, overturn a state law? I said, you know, and my husband happens to not be African American. If this federal government didn't come in the late 60s, you know, maybe down the road, 10, 15 years later when I got married, you know, is that a case where the federal government should have stepped in? And they were like, that's interesting, you know. So I think you just can't, if you go in saying you're a racist, that ends the conversation.
Yeah. I just wanted to share an email, and I don't know if you would have any response to this. This comes from someone who identifies himself as a native of Western North Carolina, making the observation that his suspicion that the kind of people that we're talking about would have been in favor of both the Iraq and the Afghanistan wars. And essentially the caller writes this: why do Tea Party people and Republicans have such a problem with kindness? They don't want to spend any money to help our citizens, only to kill our enemies. Can you explain this?
Well, first of all, some of them were against the war because some of them are very much about this country. And I talked to several people who were very against going into Iraq and Afghanistan, so it was kind of interesting. So I wouldn't say that that's necessarily the truth. And this is another case. If you go in saying you're against kindness, because so many of these people are very involved in their church. And I'm sure within, and they probably, many of them, you know, something happens like a Haiti earthquake or whatever, and, you know, they are very generous. So, you know, it's the mixture, the complicated nature of being a human being, I think, you know, and I think that we all have to give people on the other side a measure of complexity, because saying, you know, racist, unkind, whatever, is not going to get us anywhere. You know, that said, you know, you look at the policies and you sort of make your judgments. But I just don't think you can. It, like I said, on both sides, it's very difficult when we come to that. You know?
I want to get at least one more caller here, and we'll go next to someone in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hello. Rhetorical question and a comment. My question is, who is the Republican establishment? Because I've come across a lot of evidence that their leadership has been taken over by the neoconservative faction, and they are extremely cynical and undemocratic, and they're the people who got us into the war in Iraq. And I read a couple good books by Shadia Drury, who's a University of Regina, Saskatchewan, political philosopher, who has really written a book on those people, and that's my comment. Thanks. Nice to hear the voice of reason and not proselytizing for the party people. Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't know how you can respond to that, or can you?
Well, who is the Republican leadership? You know, Michael Steele, he's the national chairman, and he comes out here and there. I think, as I said, that's the next challenge to, you know, they're setting up, they've figured out that they think by being against a lot of the policies of the Obama administration, that will give them a big win in 2010 and maybe set up for a win in the White House. How long can you govern that way? Do people want that? Is that enough? When do you have to have some policies and positive policies of your own? And right now, I think they're figuring out how close should they be to the Tea Party convention, to get it back to the Tea Party, to the Tea Partiers. And I think that's something they're going to have to figure out. And I think it's going to be a tough question because, as I said, I think the independents are always the one that sort of determine elections. And at a certain point, they might get them with this cycle, but will at a certain point some of the rhetoric of some of the folks in the Tea Party movement be seen as too extreme? And how will the Tea Party movement itself adjust? As I said, you know, it started out grassroots. Some of the groups have a pact. They have candidates that they are backing. I think they're very fond of this Marco Rubio in Florida. And how will the candidates themselves and the Tea Party movement, will they feel that they have to sort of be a little more staid and a little more organized? As I said, even with the Tea Party convention, you didn't see any of the signs and the more extreme rhetoric that you saw at some of the marches. And you can best be sure that folks, they were saying to them ahead of time, okay, you know, we're going to have national press here. You know, in the beginning, they didn't want to have press. They said the working convention. Mm-hmm. And then they realized, you know what? This is going to be great. You know, more press, the better.
Real quick, just I want to pick really a detail out of an email I just gotten. Someone makes reference to an article written by Jonathan Rabin in the New York Review of Books about the Tea Party convention, making the claim that really there were essentially two factions here operating. One would be conservative Christians. The other would be Ayn Randian libertarians. And I'm not exactly sure those two groups really have all that much in common. Did you see that?
Well, as I said, I do think that I was surprised at the amount of Christianity and God. This is our country under God, and I'm not sure. And there was other folks. There were other folks who weren't really talking too much about a nation under God. So that's one of the thoughts that I had said earlier. That it'll be interesting to see how if all of these different philosophies will be under one umbrella, and it'll be interesting to see if that's going to break them up or bring them together. Mm. It's fascinating to see what the next step will be. They have this new Tea Party Express, the bus tour going around the country that'll be starting soon. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of crowds they draw and what kind of speakers they have.
Yeah. So. Also interesting that on the left there's something of a parallel movement that has now sprung up that they're calling the Coffee Party.
Coffee Party.
So that's particularly, I think, working in online venues, using social networking to try to bring people together. So we'll just have to see what happens. And we also have to quit because we're here at the end. I want to say thanks, Mary, very much for talking with us.
Thank you. Outrage always works better, though, you know.
Our guest is Mary Curtis. She is an award-winning writer-editor based in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's been a columnist and editor at the Charlotte Observer, has worked as writer-editor at New York Times, Baltimore Sun, Arizona Daily Star. Right now, she's a contributor to AOL's politicsdaily.com, and you can find some of her writing there. Again, thanks very much.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the callers.